So here we were, sitting now as an incorporated board, providing services that would enable this society to hold together, to carry its message, and we still assume the right to be the guarantors and guardians of its tradition and general welfare. Here we were, growing isolation. At the time, things were going well. We hadn't made any great blunder, so that the confidence of the society was shaken. Money was coming in with which we could work. In the board, we had aggregated a self-assumed authority, and quite properly so, during the infancy of the movement. We had aggregated the authority to print your literature, to resolve group troubles, to be answerable to the public, to administer your funds, to provide your mirror of AA Life, the monthly magazine. All of this authority we had simply assumed. And by common consent, in 1945, you were only too glad to have us do this job. Finally, it began to appear that we couldn't do the job forever, and that all of these years we had been phenomenally lucky. Or to put it more accurately, providentially guarded during our childhood. But the day would come when a great blunder would be made. The day would come when there would be a great scandal. The day might come when there would be a great religious or political division among us. The day might come when, from sheer remoteness and lack of interest or understanding the support of this overall function, would melt away. How could it be guaranteed to continue? Well, then, looking out among the groups, some of us began to regard them as a model. Realized that each group had to have its parent, its founder, so-called. Damn bad word, that, folks. And that the immediate friend of the founder became the first service committee. And they carried the spiritual message to the groups. But yea, they did more. They enabled it to function by making all of this functional arrangement. So they were the guarantors of its function, the first self-appointed committee. But we had already seen pretty clearly, even by 1945, that this was a condition that could not go on. Founders were too fallible. Moreover, you people had begun to say out at the group and area level that you wished to take your affairs into your own hands. Even as men coming of age. So the question arose, and the debate turned on how could Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, now sprawling worldwide, take its affairs into its own hands and be secure? How could these headquarters and this board of trustees, containing all this vital authority and capacity to manage, be linked to those it served in the movement and with the world outside? That was the question. Well, I had been around longer, had been in a better position to see, perhaps. And when I realized that there was no linkage between a group of services that had been responsible for half of the growth of this society, for much of its unity, and which would be bound to be responsible to a large extent for its propagation and its relation with the outside world, when I began to see that there was no real linkage between my old friends here and this movement, excepting a couple of faithful gals in the office and Dr. Bob and me, and that my old friends were unknown to you, I got simply scared to death. So I went to my old friends and I said, here, there has got to be a hookup. This movement is now grown to the point where there must be some means by which it can look after its own affairs if it wants to. And even if it doesn't want to, it is still entitled to a look. And my old friend said to me what I would have said a little earlier, and what many an old timer around AA still says. They said to me, let's keep it simple. Well, probably nobody is more keen about keeping AA simple than I am. But it had begun to be apparent that simplicity could be overdone. An automobile could be greatly simplified and its cost reduced by taking off the wheels or the tires, but it wouldn't go anyplace. And when I reminded my friends of this, they said, but yes, but things are fine. The money is coming in. People think it's all right. If we bring in a great mass of AAs, we're going to have a political brawl in every section of the country, immense confusion, preoccupation with money, with politics, with all those things we so rightfully dread. Well, they were right. But what was the alternative? The alternative was, it seemed to me, that if we didn't take this chance, if we didn't bring in the society to inspect what it had and take it over if it wished, then some fine morning this whole structure here would collapse with a terrible impact upon our capacity to carry the message. God knows what it would do with our relation with the world outside. So the real issue was, should we keep it simple by getting you people in here to see that it lasted, or would we make it complicated by keeping it so simple that it would break apart? That was the question. Well, the debate on this went on from 1945 until late in 1950. I behaved so badly that at one time nobody on the Board of Trustees wanted to have this conference. They were so distracted with my antics. There was one exception, and this is the exception. I suppose rumors of this difficulty got abroad. The movement was getting further and further away from us. We began to run short of money. We got to a point where the office was running 2,000 a month behind, the Grapevine 1,000 a month behind. We began to chew up our reserve like mad. And still this debate went on and on. Poor old Bobby Berger, God love her for what she did for this society, was caught in the middle of this contest. It may have hastened her collapse and her death. So we had a break within and a partial one without. And at that point, I began to be sorry that I had behaved so badly, and so did some of the other people. Little by little, the thing began to warp and worry around, until finally, one day in Bernard Smith's office, when the 99th committee had been called for the 100th time to consider the conference question, Bernard simply said to the committee, "Are we going to do it or ain't we?" And the committee said, "We are." The result was the third legacy program. And as soon as it was evident that that's what we were going to have, we began to let you people know something of it. Meanwhile, Hank, God love him, got in and began to try to straighten out the office to get the thing set up, something which in my exhaustion and lack of talent for such a thing was beyond my strength. And he put in a tremendous job there. And what you see over there, in very considerable part, you can thank him for. And I now wish to record my thanks for what he did for us with no thought of reward during that very trying time. So Helen, because of her Boston political sense, which I have never seen diverted to any but good uses, was delegated to help me pull together that third legacy panel. And there was a heap of consultation, and we found to overcome this objection that there would be terrible politics at the grassroots, we had to go in for a species of political invention. How in God's name, from a whole state or a fraction of a state, could you derive a committee and a delegate without one awful brawl? Well, we began to look at our business meetings, our feeble attempts to transact business in AA clubs and groups, and we found that most of the difficulty that we had there stemmed from two primary causes. One was the difficulty often stemmed from close, hotly contested elections, leaving behind a hostile minority. And boy, a hostile minority of 10% in Alcoholics Anonymous can look like 59%. So we couldn't have hostile minorities or close elections. Another difficulty there seemed to be in standard business or parliamentary procedure lay in the practice of personal nominations from office, nominations arising from the floor of a meeting, or even worse, nominations concocted in the back room by a bunch of old-timers and foisted on a group. So the plan to derive committeemen and delegates had to be minus personal nominations and there could be no close vote. So, looking out the window, we dreamed up this scheme. And it was quite a breathtaking business because it had to be tried on all at once everywhere. We had to take an awful brush, an awful chance. So the essence of it was 2/3 voter lot for the delegates and no personal nominations from the floor or anywhere. And that was the essence of the machinery which got you folks here for that first thrilling conference. It was the process which got you here feeling like servants instead of senators. It was the process which got you here without leaving much hostility behind. And that was the essence of it. Then the question came when you arrived, how would you be related to this board of trustees who already had its legal rights, who possessed power over our public relations, which had title to our publications, which had our money? Legal. What power could you people exercise over them? Well, legally, you couldn't exercise any if they chose to hold on to it. What influence could you have upon the selection of these trustees? Legally, you couldn't have any. But the trustees, God love them, wisely consented to make themselves amenable, traditionally, to your desire. They said, and rightly said, let us keep the legal form of this thing. We needed to transact business. But let us, on any 2/3 vote of this conference, in which we indeed participate, be traditionally under mandate by this conference. Let us be a part of this conference, but a minority. And let us hereafter, when we name successors for the board, let us submit these names to a committee of the conference. And when we get an out-of-town trustee, let us inquire of the appropriate region who is the man they want. And thus, in general principle, there came into being the structure of the third legacy. So today, in this last hour of the time when the third legacy was an experiment, I, sharing with you its certain knowledge of success, I am more moved than at almost any other time in my life. And the moment of the transference of the authority to serve from us old-timers to you is at hand and will be certified, let us trust, in 1955. So, good friends, I'm sure that in retrospect, we see that we have had under construction all these nearly 20 years a way of life, which we might say is housed in the AA Cathedral of Spirit. And standing on its vast floor, there are 120,000. And they are able to stand there because the 12 steps are inscribed thereon. And they stand in safety. And no more abyss of alcoholism will open it in that floor wherein they can fall. And this floor is one of ever-expanding, illimitable dimension. The principles upon which we stand and upon which we individually live Then over the years, in the exciting time of our adolescence, we saw sidewalls to our cathedral rise. Very uncertain at times, and never could we be sure that these sidewalls would contain us in complete unity until that day in Cleveland when the tradition was validated and we realized that we had placed wonderful buttresses, 12 of them, as an insurance that these great walls would always contain us. And in the 4 years since that history-making day in Cleveland, we have busied ourselves upon the final construction, the spire of our Cathedral of Service, wherein shines the beacon light to all of the world of us who are still in the dark. The spire, with its beacon light of service, and the work upon the spire is now complete. And our confidence is, I trust, that it will there shine throughout the world onto the most distant beachheads for so long as God wants it. May this be His will.